Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Robert, I don't think people a month or two ago were thinking a great first world title feud as Seth wins the belt would be Finn Balor. Finn didn't seem like he had been protected or built up to the point where it'd be believable that he would beat Seth. Did tonight's segment with Finn Balor referring back 7 years ago to getting injured by Seth and saying it's been eating him up inside and put him in a bad track on his career, did that cover or close that gap a little bit between where Balor was and where most pay-per-view world title challengers are? I know the world title matches can be less important on a match that has a couple Money in the Bank matches, but it has been booked for Money in the Bank, Seth defending against Balor. Your thoughts on what they did tonight to build that up?
I thought it was the smart way to go if they were going to do it, because like that's an elephant in the room, that whole thing of, you know, him hurting him and then the title vacating and Owens getting the belt. They never resolved that from however many years ago as they said it was tonight. So I am glad if they were going to go somewhere with it, that was the place to go, not just business as usual or Judgment Day or anything like that. I still think that gap, though, that you're referring to does exist. I don't think it's going to matter come the night of the pay-per-view, but if we're looking at it on June 12th right now, I think that gap still exists, although they did a good thing tonight in storyline.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's going to be a good match, and I don't think that's the number one selling point in pro wrestling these days. It's a night. It's not something you want to go without very often. I mean, you want to have wrestlers who can always have good matches with each other. This has a chance to be real high end. And so that is a selling point, but obviously it's stakes, consequence, personal issues, and most often a rooting interest in somebody winning or losing that really drives crowd reactions, especially in the formula WWE uses. And they needed to do something. The tension between Priest and Balor was a little hard to read last week, and this week they addressed it. I'm still not quite sure what to make of it. Priest is giving Balor some advice, saying, of course, I won't cash in on you if I win Money in the Bank and you beat Seth, but Seth's driving an issue, a wedge between us, and we need to, you know, you need to take care of business of Money in the Bank so we can get past Seth. Do you think something is still brewing there where there's a breakup and maybe a Priest babyface turn? He wrestled pretty clean tonight. He didn't like Balor interfering last week. He's been more likable, although he did tell Gunther and Kaiser to go pick the bones afterwards when they came out. So he wasn't, you know, some mixed signals, I guess, is what I'm saying. What do you think they're doing with that?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a possibility, but I think they're going about it a really weird way. If that was like, I don't think they're doing a good enough job besides having him wrestle a different style and you know, have the tension with Balor. To me, there was almost like a heel aspect the way he came across with Balor, because Balor's plight was much more understandable in the context of that story. I definitely think there's a split somewhere with these entities coming up in the very near future. Which direction they go, I don't really know, because I think it could be a little unpredictable. I definitely think they're leaning in the direction of him being a face, but I don't think they're quite either they're not showing their hand completely, or they're not doing like the best job of driving that point home.
So two quick questions. Do you think there's any chance Finn Balor wins? I mean, could they surprise us? And if so, it could be a short reign, and then there's a quick rematch on Raw. Seth regains it, something like that, to maybe take the lineage of the title away from just winning a tournament and actually a champion losing to another guy who becomes champion but regaining it. It's about the only, you know, circumstance that I see. I don't see them going with Balor as a full-fledged semi-long-term champion or you know, full-fledged long-term champion. Or is it just a given that Balor's losing? And if he loses, does it involve Priest in some way? And I haven't really come up with a scenario where that would make sense based on what I'm expecting out of Priest these days.
Yeah, I think you can kind of do all things in that scenario. So one, yeah, I don't think Finn has a chance in that match whatsoever. I think they, you know, your one sort of devil's advocate scenario is somewhat valid, but they're also, I think, trying to rectify that by having Seth also like wrestle on every show, and he's going to NXT to do like They are trying to establish that title as the workers' title, as Seth's title. And that's why Balor, despite some of the misgivings, is a pretty good opponent if that is what you are going to do. I think he ultimately loses relatively cleanly as you generally do in WWE. And it's more of an issue of you weren't there for us. I think you can just kind of do that without having to devalue Seth either. You can't just have Judgment Day come out there and turn on Balor or something or cost him that. I think that really serves the title and the greater purpose if that's the direction you go.
Yeah, yeah. And Seth issued open challenge for next week. Mm-hmm. Who is it? They also right away advertised Logan Paul is returning. They've also asked, we're hyping on NXT. Will Seth answer Bron Breakker's challenge? They are having Seth in a lot of situations all at once. Mm-hmm. He's a fighting champion, open challenges, a grudge from the past in case to Balor, an up-and-comer wanting a shot now that Seth's saying he's a fighting champion and Bron Breakker, and then an open challenge next week against someone. Anyone come to mind?
Not off the top of my head. Those things can be a little funky sometimes that you get really hyped from and they're nothing, and sometimes like they're a big surprise. I don't have that million-dollar answer. I mean, they could do Logan Paul. That would actually be kind of interesting if they did that because of the history there, but I don't think that's the direction they're going to go. Although those two entities will be basically the two biggest stars on the show next week, so they need to have some sort of interaction because of their past.
Yeah, I agree. So just in general, because we haven't had you on the show in a while, what is your take on the job that Seth is doing and that the booking scheme is doing in terms of presenting the new men's world heavyweight title and Seth as the champion? Certainly the crowd loves to sing a song. They milked that a lot tonight. I thought Balor was good selling for it and getting upset by it and agitated by it, which of course just encouraged more of it. But how do you feel about the presentation of the new belt and Seth as champ so far?
Yeah, some of it's a little ham-fisted because they're almost trying to make up for lost time on Raw without a title, and so sometimes it can be a little bit much, and I think that you run the risk of – it was like Impact like 8 years ago that did Eric Young defending on every show. Obviously, you don't want something like that because after a while, it will start to devalue the title. I do think Raw is – I don't know if it's a much better show than it was a couple of months ago. In fact, I necessarily don't think that, but there seems to be a structure and a stakes to the show that wasn't there before that I think just helps button up the show a whole lot better. So I still think that the title reign's been fine. Like, I don't really have specific misgivings with that, but it's also not like lighting the world on fire necessarily, despite some good matches and some storylines with multiple links. But I think Raw as in general has been well served by just having a champion. And although it's clearly the secondary champion, it's a like you might say, Wade, like it might be the second most important title in the company or the third most important title, but that's more important than the fourth. And so I think there's something valid to having it, even if it's definitely a consolation prize to what the real title is.
Yeah. All right. Well put. Let's pause here and formally introduce ourselves, and then we will move to more conversation about Raw calls and emails, and. Yeah, and all that good stuff that we usually do here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, June 12th, 2023. I am Wade Keller, the host of the program and the editor and publisher and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com and the host of various podcasts, including Everything with Rich and Wade, The Fix with Todd Martin, Post Pay-Per-View and PLE Roundtables, the Wade Keller Hotlines, and more. Those all come with a VIP membership. I also host a variety of free shows throughout the week, including the post shows after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision this Saturday night, so join us for that. We go live about 5 minutes after those shows end at WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can navigate to the live stream or look for the direct link along with our phone number and email address at the top and bottom of my TV reports covering Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday night. And also I host the flagship on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast feed, our Blue Logo show, and I'll be simulcasting the VIP exclusive show, Everything with Rich and Wade, as this week's flagship, and we'll be recording that tomorrow night. So if you have questions for the show, feel free to email. It can be about Raw or AEW or other WWE topics, the Bloodline, or anything else, Iron Cheek memories, whatever. Bring it on with questions. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com to send questions in for our recording of the flagship that will be recorded tomorrow and go up late tomorrow night. That's Tuesday night this week. In the meantime, if you're live streaming the show, you are invited to call or email about tonight's episode of Raw. The phone number, if you want to participate, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1 on your keypad, that indicates to us that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. The other voice you hear on the show so far is Robert Vijhos. He is the host of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, which drops Monday nights on the PW Torch Daily Cast feed. So search PW Torch in your podcast app and subscribe to the free PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, a different show with a different theme, a different host every day of the week. And you can check out the full lineup for free. Again, just search PW Torch. Robert, welcome back. It's been a couple months. Good to have you back in the co-host chair.
It's great to be back, Wade, and I love how you did your homework in the 3 months I haven't been there, and you got my plug and intro absolutely flawless this time, so that was amazing.
Good.
First time ever, like 3 years to do the show with you. Yeah.
Pro wrestling talked about MMA sports or something.
That's part of the MMA Torch of podcast, yes.
Oh, my God, yes.
Where we go.
Thank you for the compliment, but also drawing attention to all my foibles.
To the flaws, yes.
Yes. No need to apologize. No need. I'll get back at you somehow later.
Will make something grammatically incorrect, and you we will not have pronoun agreement later on, and I'm in trouble. Yeah.
Just don't say try and do, unless you, you know, if you really want to get in a fight. all right. So yeah, everybody search PW Torch and subscribe. Robert, I plug a little bit more of your show. Like, what are the hot topics in MMA that you're talking about, and why might some people who are MMA fans, casual or hardcore, appreciate your show and like what you and Rick do?
Sure. So every Monday night, as part of, as Wade said, the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup of podcasts, we do MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, which at its core is really just a pro wrestling show, but the topic we talk about mostly is MMA, although we can mix in a little wrestling, and certainly with the merger of the companies, the discussion is more relevant than ever. Currently, you know, we're in a bit of a drought in really good MMA, but there's a lot of MMA around the world happening, so we're discussing a lot of that. You had Amanda Nunes retire, one of the most dominant champions we've had in MMA over the last several years. So today's show was a little more bite-sized than normal because we had a little bit of a scheduling crunch, so most of it we spent talking about her legacy and the aftermath of her being gone. It's a pretty seismic shift, her not being a part of women's MMA right now.
All right, very good. Well, let's pivot back to Raw and talk about other aspects of the show. We'll actually begin our caller part of the show with Kyle from Baltimore this week. Kyle, don't mean to throw you off guard by going to you so soon, but welcome to the show. And what's on your mind about Raw tonight?
And I guess a few things is that I mentioned this a little bit on Friday about Rhea Ripley, about the whole championship stuff, about her getting a new title. I think it looks a lot better than Asuka's title personally, but I like the fact that it also looks like Seth's belt too. So I also like the World Heavyweight Championship belt, the way it looks. I like how it looks on Rhea too, with the white shirt too. So I like the look and everything. So that's great. I guess my main question is that, so is Rhea Ripley going to skip Money in the Bank? Cause she clearly has no opponent right now, which is interesting, and I have a problem with that too, because you would think she would have a big opponent, you know, after WrestleMania. Well, she had Zelina, she had Natalya, but they all call them as real challengers. I call like Finn Balor real challenge for Seth Rollins. I call his match with AJ Styles a real opponent to determine the first World Heavyweight Champion. But for Rhea Ripley, though, at this point, you would think she would have a credible opponent headed to Money in the Bank, but clearly it could be all occupied in the Money in the Bank ladder match, because I was thinking of Becky, but she's stuck in this Trish feud. But so what do you think about Rhea Ripley, and in terms of opponents, are they going to have an opponent for her, or just wait until SummerSlam?
Robert, what do you think about that? Specifically what Kyle said, and you can broaden it out too, and just talk about what you thought of the video package on her, the dynamic with Dominic, just what they're doing with her, because she has, as we see tonight, post-draft, is getting a top-tier push. And certainly it's not just Dominic. That's a reason for that. She had obviously a lot. I mean, the the chemistry between them has been wonderful as a heel pairing, and the crowd eats it up. But what do you think of what they're doing with Rhea?
Well, I'll say in a comical sense, in my household over here, we were really rooting for Cody and Rhea to have a match tonight. So that was, and I'm not saying that sarcastically. We're like, oh, we could actually just do this, and that would be kind of a cool concept. Mm-hmm. So I think to Kyle's question, they're two in the same. She is kind of serving two roles on the show right now. Yes, she is the women's champion, but she's also a major part of the men's storylines as well. Again, she's interacting with Cody. She's part of Dominic. She's part of Judgment Day, this, you know, super important faction that's also feuding for the world title. So she does kind of have double duty. It doesn't mean you can't have opponents for her. I tend to think they probably wouldn't mean as much right now.
But hold on, that's a well and good, right, for her to be in the men's division. That's fine. But at the end of the day, she's to be part of the women's division, and I know that their majority is them in the Money in the Bank ladder match. That's fine, and that's because I think just the only major star I can think of for Rhea Ripley right now is Becky Lynch in terms of the way they're booking her. I guess they can have Raquel, but they gotta have to build her up to make her feel important enough to face Rhea. But I guess that's my main point, is that it's well and good that she's in the men's division. She's messing around with the Judgment Day. That's all well and good, but at the end of the day, she needs to be a part of the women's division since she is a women's wrestler. So that's my main point about this, about the situation. But you can tell you on.
But let me ask you though, Kyle, if she was just not on the show, would that be a better option? I'm asking that earnestly because I think if you don't have an opponent for someone, it's okay to not have them on a show as long as they're not like they don't exist or you go months and months without doing so, like, does it have to even be a choice? Like, what would your take be on that, Kyle?
Well, I think at this point, then if there's really no one for her to face. I mean, basically, all majority of the top names I can think of are stuck in the ladder match. So probably a okay situation for her to not be in the ladder match. And I think it's also because during this whole Asuka, Charlotte, Bianca thing on SmackDown, they're messing around with that, which is fine with that scenario, and I think that's what they're focusing on for right now, heading into Money in the Bank, during the match before Money in the Bank. But, you know, the point is, so they're messing with that, so I guess they don't have to have her right now in this pay-per-view if she's not going to be clearly not the focus for right now. So maybe they could hold off till SummerSlam. Maybe she shouldn't be on the show if they're not going to really do anything meaningful with her as the women's champion. So maybe that's what they should have done. But so
Robert,
that was pretty much my point. I agree with you conceptually. Like, they probably should have an opponent. You should kind of always have an opponent for your champion, but if not, she's still in such a good spot on the card that I don't think it's ultimately harmful, although it, you know, it does speak to just their general lack of depth that they tend to show, even when other parts of their booking have gotten really good. The women's division is always kind of lagging behind in terms of depth and focus.
Yeah, I don't think if you don't have a title challenger on the next pay-per-view, that's a big deal, especially when you're paired up with Dominic and you can be on TV in that way. Money in the Bank is going to potentially determine a future surprise opponent for her, but she needs to have somebody else. But so many of the women are tied up right now in that Money in the Bank match. And when you have two women's titles, four men's singles titles and tag titles, you don't need every title on every show. Unless you're calling it Night of Champions or something. Even then you don't have to have every title defended. So they're going to fill out this card just fine without her. And I have no problem with them building her up as vignettes and having her get her personality across by playing off of Dominic or being ringside for him. It keeps her active and relevant on television in a way that isn't just built only around being the champion and defending it. So I'm fine with that. I don't think you take her off TV because it's not like she isn't doing other things that are worthwhile in the meantime. Kyle?
Well, yeah. What do you mean? Going to me for it now, or okay?
Yeah, go ahead, Kyle. Yep.
I was gonna say, yeah. Well, I mean, it was just similar of how she was heading into all throughout last year. I was saying it to myself, you know, she's been focusing on the men's division. All this, it was fine, but I wanted her to get into the women's division because she needs to be more into that. I had that problem with it last year, and I think, and that's my main play for right now, but if she, but since you know, she is tied with the women's ladder match, and that's fine. And then she is still part of, she is still on TV every week. She still feels important with Dominic and all that stuff, and that's fine. So I guess we just have to wait until I guess when he makes a silver list, so we can finally get a real opponent, or whoever that will be. So then I guess my next thing then is I really want to get into the Finn Balor, Seth Rollins, back and forth. I really enjoyed that a lot. That was good. The only problem that I had is with the crowd seeing Seth's music throughout the promo. I thought that was just completely stupid. I get that. I love Seth. I'm glad. I love that he's super over. I love seeing his theme song too. But at some point, I wanted to. This was an important promo between the two. This is the first time that they're facing each other for a world championship since 2016. Since their first match, and it was a big deal. What I love what Finn had to say hear him on was the fact of him getting, he got screwed because he got injured and he never gotten back to the, he never felt important after that and blaming Seth. So I loved all of that, but it just, I got distracted over the people singing Rollins theme song. So what do you think about that entire promo, and do you think it was a distraction and took away from this important promo and headed to the match of Money in the Bank?
So I'll add, and then I'll throw to Robert, and then I'll get my thoughts. Doug Saylor of Surrey, BC says, I'm so over the Seth Battle Them. I know it's great for fans. Battle Anthem, excuse me. I know it's great for the fans attending the show, but on television, it just slows down promos and matches. For me, it's quickly becoming as annoying as the what chance. So, Kyle, you're not alone in not enjoying this. Robert, what do you think?
So I'm going to disagree with the emailer and Kyle there. I think that was an amazing wrinkle tonight. Sometimes it's got its issues, right? Sometimes it is a little distracting. But tonight, and I don't know if Finn was actually a little thrown off by it or he's just a good pro wrestler and knew to sort of acknowledge it, and the same thing with Seth, but it actually added to the promo. Specifically, in this case, the content of the promo is kind of like, Seth, you are living your best life out here, you know, and they're singing your thing, and I can't even get a word in, and I've been screwed for 7 years and this and that. So I think that worked. Also, I think it is a little bit different than like the what, or even what Fandangoing was or whatever, because like when the what or CM Punk or any of that, they're also kind of protest chants as well. And that's not what this is. This is sort of getting a little too overindulgent on one guy's theme song. Now, I agree, it can be a bit of a hindrance, but tonight specifically, if there was ever a chance for it to exist, it was for that promo tonight.
I'm more with Robert, Kyle, and Doug. I'm actually kind of nodding along to everything Robert said, that sometimes it can be annoying, and it can slow down matches, slow down promos. You're sort of like, all right, get on with it. Stop soaking it up. Let's move to the next thing. I didn't get that vibe tonight. I really enjoyed Finn Balor selling the chances, getting under his skin and irking him. Obviously, it encouraged the fans to do more of it, and that was kind of the point. I think WWE should be cognizant of it, even though I thought tonight it was useful, and I find myself more often than not thinking – I don't know, but I think fans who tune in on TV, regular fans, infrequent viewers, are like, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, it's like a soccer match type crowd involvement that we don't get in the States very often. But it might wear out its welcome, because while every city finds it novel to do it, because those fans might be doing it for the first time or the first time in a year, on TV every week, there's a risk of it getting repetitive. And testing the patience of viewers. I think WWE will be looking at the minute-by-minute numbers, and if they think that there's evidence that, well, viewership stayed steady or went up during that, that it's starting to drop, you know, that's the type of hard data that I think should drive a decision to maybe wrap it up quicker and have Seth just kind of raise his arms up and then lower them, and the crowd quiets down for him. When my arms go up, your hand, you know, whatever Miz says. When my hand goes up, your mouth goes shut. Is that it? Is that his phrase? He hasn't said it as often lately. But yeah, Seth can do it in a nice way to kind of signal, all right, and kind of be a conductor and bring it down. I just don't think they're there yet. Not for me, not for Robert. And tonight I thought was actually a really good example of it working, because you actually had a heel getting irritated by it. And I think The goal is, and I think it worked, is fans are enjoying seeing Balor be irritated by the fans having a great time singing Seth's song. Kyle, back to you for any follow-up to that.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, I do like them to face each other in the base, I guess. I just assume that, you know, it's from them being their first promo. You'd think that people would care what they had to say about them being, but whatever, I guess, you know, Seth is over and that's great and they're singing a song and they're, and look, I would have done the same thing if I was there in person, but whatever. The match could be fun. I think the last thing I wanted to touch on is, you know, the backstage thing between Balor and JD McDonough, that was interesting. And then having Priest qualify for Money in the Bank, and that they're clearly going to do a Judgment Day split. So I guess my question, you can talk about this off the call, is that will it be a good idea for them to split up the Judgment Day, or is that a bad idea? Because they've been teasing that since last week, and then this whole thing with JD McDonough and Balor. So what do you think about that? But that's a different call.
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Kyle. Yeah, the JD McDonough thing we add that to the mix as a factor in the trajectory of what's going on with Judgment Day. Robert, where do you think this is going? What kind of journey are we on? What's the kind of the landing point with these moving parts?
I think they're probably going to shed a little bit of fat at some point. And it's probably going to come in the form of Priest or Balor ultimately. I think Judgment Day as a whole, though, will not fully break up because I still think it's a valuable enough thing to use on TV. Like I don't know. Does Dominic and Rhea work if it's not in Judgment Day? Like, can they just be on the show? I don't know. You know, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose as a tag team are cool, but not necessarily the Shield. So I don't know if those things can work. So I think we're just going to get a little bit of a cosmetic change. I mean, there was a point this was the Edge faction, so it can undergo a thing. But I think as long as you have, I guess Rhea and Dominic are kind of the key for it staying Judgment Day as it is, and then you can make sort of cosmetic changes, I think, around it from there.
Yeah. What do you think of JD McDonough?
Not much, and not that I have a low opinion of him. I haven't thought about it very much.
Yeah.
So.
No. Fair enough. Yeah.
Next question on that one.
So
I had to step out really quick for Rod tonight, so I have no idea what you guys were talking about on this.
Gotcha.
And apparently that was in the window because I thought I kind of had caught up on everything that.
There was this very subtle thing where Balor showed up in the background during a JD McDonough promo, I think on his first week on Raw. And so people are thinking, oh, there's going to be something going on with them. And now they're playing
And then
up.
Tonight they were talking. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then tonight they were chatting and Balor was going, it's not about this. It's not about other things. It's about money. And JD says, thanks. I'll catch up with you later. So there's a friendship and alliance brewing between them. And then Priest just kind of didn't seem bothered by it or affected by it. But nevertheless, they're obviously laying the groundwork for something with them.
Right. I got you now. I was thinking of something from tonight that I missed. I was okay. So I think that kind of speaks to what we talked about at the top of the show. And maybe I can amend my earlier point. Maybe the Judgment Day needs to be always at least Rhea, Dominic, and Priest.
Yeah.
That is the case. And it's just the face specific thing is the, like, I don't know if you have broken off Judgment Day with Finn as a face, but I don't think the McDonough thing, the way they're talking about it, would necessarily fit unless it's like, hey, I'm just still with these guys for the cash. And that was the implication of that promo. I'm not sure though. It's ambiguous enough though right now.
I know. Yeah. It's the direction of Judgment Day. I mean, Priest going babyface just feels like where this is heading, because he hasn't done anything heelish other than, you know, telling Gunther and Kaiser go pick Riddle's bones. But there wasn't much else from Priest that I recall that you could look at and say that he's done anything heelish. I'm trying to, because like last week his promo was kind of straightforward and likable. He wrestled clean. He won clean. He didn't like Balor coming to ringside. So, yeah, I mean, coming out of the really impressive showing against Bad Bunny in Puerto Rico, I know it kind of opened people's eyes. And even the announcers tonight talked about it, that, you know, Priest is evolving before our very eyes and Judgment Day's brought him to a new level. But I wonder if the story arc is going to be, but we're going to get eventually that next level might be separate from Judgment Day. And as a babyface, setting up a feud, not quite sure how it all you know, there's no real, to me, obvious predictable way it all lands, though, once all the moving pieces kind of settle and they do whatever angle they're building towards now. Maybe JD gets added to the Judgment Day, and we just ride with an expanded Judgment Day for a few months first.
Yeah, that's also, I think, the laziest possibility, but could also be the most likely, because it wouldn't, it wouldn't surprise me if 5 months from now we got a report from one of you guys that, like, they didn't know which direction the story was going at the time. I think that sometimes also happens. Like, again, I'm not reporting it, and obviously you're not reporting it, but I think they're kind of leaving their options open, though, just when you're reading all the tea leaves. They might not be decided on this.
Yep. All right. Our phone number, if you want to join us as we continue live streaming here, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We're going to go to area code 914 next, and then on deck is LaMarcus in Washington, D.C. in 240. 914, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Oh, my name is Brad. How are you? I've called a few times in the past. How are you?
Oh, yep.
How are you, Wade?
Yep. Thanks, Brad. Yep. I recognize the number now. Welcome to the show. Yeah. What's on your mind?
No, it's great to talk to you guys. You know, also, you know, I just finished watching, so I didn't hear Kyle's entire call. I will go back and listen to it. I always like when Kyle calls, but I also wanted to talk about the priest thing, because I find priest to be, in a certain way, like the most compelling part of Raw, especially over the last few weeks. Like, he just really has elevated himself, and I don't know, there's something so much more interesting about him. There's something where I feel like he's really ready now for like a major stardom. Like, I really think that this could happen, and the way that this is all kind of shaping out, the thing that I noticed about the JD McDonagh thing was not just that Finn was talking to him backstage, but when Damian started walking over, JD kind of gave sort of like an adversarial sort of look to Finn, like, oh, look who's coming now. It's your buddy. It wasn't like, oh, Damian's here. Okay, I guess I better run. It was more like, I don't really like this guy kind of look from JD McDonagh. And that was very interesting. And I almost feel like what this is being set up to do is, you know, as time goes on, to have JD be almost that hitman that, you know, that Finn Balor became on Edge, almost like, you know, what happens to Damian will be what happened to Edge in a certain way. And I don't know if it's going to be, you know, as much of a beat down and a sympathetic sort of thing, but I find this to be a storyline that could go somewhere really, really great for Damian Priest if it goes right. Because, I mean, let's face it, like, without Judgment Day right now, without everything that they're doing, I mean, Raw would feel very empty without all the things that they're doing. You know, they're such a huge part of it. And Damian Priest, to me, has been, you know, in a certain way, the most interesting part of the whole thing, especially after the Bad Bunny thing and everything that he's done. So I don't want to beat a dead horse with it, but do you think that – did you notice that sort of adversarial, sort of sinister look from JD McDonagh? Because I think that was meant to sort of be pretty prominent there.
Yes. Prominent but subtle, if that can coexist. Like, you're supposed to notice, but they weren't over-the-top acting. But it did sort of feel like JD's like, oh, your guy is coming up behind you here, interrupting – our pep talk, our bonding, our, you know, budding partnership, whatever is going on there. Don't know if it was jealousy or just thinking, Priest is the guy who gave you a dirty look for when you tried to help him out. And, you know, maybe JD is going to try to sway Balor against him. Robert, did you pick up on that? And any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I would say it's like intentional, like the way, like they, that's definitely the impression you were supposed to get it. I don't think it was, like, as Wade said, it's subtle, but it's clear. For sure. I think that was, that was the direction they're going. I will say, though, to his other point too, about how important the Judgment Day is on this. And I think really there was a change at some point, and it's been going on for a while, but the only thing that, like, keeps them as the Judgment Day is, like, you know, being called the Judgment Day and stuff, it's like just their attire. they're not actually as weird as they were, and they come off way less cartoony. And I've noticed that it's kind of helped every single character within this faction, in that they're just like a little bit more normal. Like sometimes it's cool to be in the Gothic faction when it's like you're 15 and you're really excited about the ministry. But when you actually look at it in the context of a modern wrestling storyline, doesn't work as well. And I feel all the characters, especially Damian Priest, have just been a little more three-dimensional within the Judgment Day lately. And I think that might be kind of what you're hitting on there.
Yeah, well, let's just play a match. What is Damian Priest's like future later this year if things go well for him? Where do you think they're aiming for him to be on the depth chart? Obviously, babyface-wise on Raw, there's Cody and Seth as basically co-top male babyfaces. Is Priest better off as a heel? And do you agree with Brad that he is starting to shine and that he's becoming compelling? I don't think people describe Damian Priest as compelling ever on this show before. Not that he was like awful, but it didn't come up as, oh, he's finally like kind of finding a lane or getting some traction as a character. But it does seem like coming out of the Bad Bunny match, that is something that people are noticing. And I think Priest has found a little bit more of a comfort zone as a character, a little more range in trying to figure out, I think he's found a way to kind of present himself in a more marketable way that doesn't feel as stiff and one-dimensional as it did before. But how are you feeling, Robert?
Yeah, like I said before, and I think that goes on with what I said, is he's not so much the Halloween or the Rage character. Remember, you had that going for a little while. Like, he's finally fully kind of shaken that, so he's sort of a regular guy. I do think, and this kind of sounds like an insult, but it's not meant to be, like, he is actually what a good version of a Baron Corbin could have been. Or like what people I think envisioned for that. Like he's not, he's not the guy to challenge Brock if Brock was a champion or Roman. Like he's not quite that guy, but he's a guy you can kind of beat right before that to get to there. He's a guy that can main event a lot of these televised shows with the current track he's on now, because I think he has loosened up just enough. And I think he's never been bad in the ring, but he feels just a little bit, there's something that's just a little less stiff in general about him. So I think, like kind of where Kane was for a lot of years in that sort of spot where it can matter if you beat him, but it's actually not that big of a deal would you beat him, because a lot of people do it, but it means something and it marks a place on the card.
Very good. Brad, back to you for any follow-up on that or a new topic.
Yeah, I mean, to me, to a lesser extent, Damian Priest is reminding me sort of what happened to Roman Reigns, where he was like the big dog and he was this, character that was, obviously, big time, but, for some reason his look changed his eye color changed. I don't know what it is about Damian Priest, but he just has a better look even now. Like, he looks more imposing. It's not even that he looks meaner. It's just that he looks, I don't know if it's the way he's dressing or what it is, but way different from when he was the U.S. champion, way different from what we've seen out of him in the past. It just looks like a cooler, more, more imposing or more, realistic champion version of what he was before. And it's just, to me, it's really coming across great. I really love it. I don't know. Did you guys touch upon Zoe Stark at all?
Nope, haven't yet.
Yeah, she really, she's been put in an incredible position, coming out and doing these. I mean, her promo wasn't very good. You could tell she's a little nervous out there. But, when she was standing at the top of the aisleway, I was saying to myself, wow, like, she's in a really good position, being teamed up with Trish Stratus, being, tonight the mouthpiece for Trish Stratus, working with Becky Lynch. And being that person that clearly is positioned above a Chelsea Green, above a Sonya Deville, like, you sit back there and watch, and it just is very interesting. Because I think I've always thought Zoe, watching a lot of NXT is great in the ring, but just to see her in this position is quite frankly a little bit weird, but I think it kind of works too. I think she's, I just want to know what you guys thought of like her placement there and like kind of what she's kind of slowly becoming before our eyes, I guess.
Yeah, I think she was good enough to be worth being one of the call-ups from NXT that you position immediately in a higher spot than most. She's still got to prove she can earn crowd response and have good matches. and be good on the on promos. I thought she came across a little nervous today on as she was interacting on the ramp, and it wasn't bad. I just there was aspects of it that felt I felt like she was nervous, like that this is that she was feeling pressure being in that larger venue and in front of such a large audience. Nothing that I think it disqualifies her from being on the trajectory that she's on and getting a nice push. And I just, I like that they didn't define her down first and then expect people to care about her later. And so, you know, so far it's solid and I get why they're giving her a push. She's got a distinct look, a distinct vibe to her whole character that's different than some of the interchangeable aspects of some of the other wrestlers. Robert, well, what do you think so far of Zoe?
I think she's been fine, and I've watched a lot less of the more recent era of NXT, so I'm a little less familiar with her prior works. I come in with more of a fresh slate. I do feel like, again, like I agree with those parameters, and that's how you kind of need to push almost every NXT performer. And it really hit home where you're saying tonight it hit home, but in general, I still think she feels a little out of place, and that doesn't mean she doesn't quite have the talent. It just feels like, I don't know what it is that sentence hasn't quite been completed yet for me, although I think she's generally done fine. She was kind of dismissed pretty thoroughly, though, as the other heels came through, which is something I don't think someone that's generally like the top heel challenger would kind of do. I also think, though, like as you said, she's put in an incredible position, and so maybe that's some of my think where the star power is a little off, because yes, you're also in there with Trish and Becky. Like that is more so than just being in there with the current champion, because you're in there with those two. So that's a little bit different level of kind of responsibility, care, and exposure that she's getting that even someone else who is like pushed to the world title right away might not get.
Brad, anything else you want to add about Zoe?
Yeah, just really quick. Yeah, because it felt like normally you would get, Trish isn't here tonight. You know, let me kick your ass, Zoe. And, you know, Becky wins the match against Zoe, might be hard fought, but whatever. But it wasn't like that. You know, it was like, okay, Becky, Zoe's the next mountain to climb almost for Becky. You know, that's kind of what it felt like to me. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they're, again, positioning her in that way. Did you guys touch upon Logan Paul returning?
We just threw it in when we talked about Seth having an open challenge, and I just said, well, Logan Paul's coming next week. So we thought of that possibility. No need to apologize.
I think more – I kind of hope this doesn't happen in a certain way, but do you think there's a strong chance he just demands into Money in the Bank, I'm the seventh guy, well, you know, let me have they give him a qualifying match against a Gargano or something who's returning in Cleveland or something like that? I don't know. Do you guys see that as the return reason, or do you see it as the open challenge for Seth? Because I found the placement of the Logan Paul returns right after Seth announced he was doing an open challenge to be a little bit almost too obvious that he would be the open challenger. So I'm sure that Triple H, and I'm sure you guys agree, and Vince and all them would love this guy, you know, on his podcast and everywhere he goes carrying around that briefcase. I mean, I'm sure they would love that. I don't know. I kind of hope it doesn't happen, but I wouldn't hate it, but I kind of want to see one of the six guys that's in it win it. But do you guys think that's a distinct possibility?
Well, when we look at who's in it, Butch, Ricochet, Shinsuke, and Santos don't feel like top candidates to win. LA Knight could win. They've established the winner isn't necessarily going to go after one of the world champions. If the winner thinks I can't beat the world champion, but I think I can beat a secondary champion, fine, although that almost feels like it has to be Austin Theory, because Gunther is not it's sort of like, you know, when you – in the playoffs, you're like, you're the number one seed, but the eighth seed is better than the sixth seed because of some injury and a guy came back and now they're a better team than eighth seed. Like getting Gunther is not like this big step down from Seth in terms of your chance of winning. So, I mean, Damian Priest maybe wins and maybe Balor gets jealous that he's got a title shot, but it's not really a great, I don't know if it's a great gimmick for Priest to carry around. It doesn't feel like that's a great fit for him. So, it almost is like LA Knight or a surprise or a seventh person. So as far as Logan becoming a seventh person, I wouldn't rule it out. It's possible they threw Logan on right after the Seth Open Challenge just to get us talking about it, to maybe, you know, get people to tune in and think, oh, Maybe I'm going to see a Logan Paul Seth match on Raw, but it's not going to happen. But they wanted you to think it might. That's kind of where I'm leaning at this point. Robert, what do you think?
I think we might get both, actually, because like there's no reason they can't do both. And I think, again, there's going to be at least some interaction with Seth and Paul. I think that I would feel pretty confident in saying. And I think it's a fairly high likelihood he ends up in the match. Although if that does happen, they do have to be very careful in how they do it. Like, I know he's good at what he does, but that's also like a match that all the pros get very hurt in when they're in on a regular basis. So they would obviously have to orchestrate it pretty uniquely. And as you said, like, LA Knight's really the only guy that even makes sense of the people in the match now for this very mid-card-y Money in the Bank match. Logan Paul would be a much better Money in the Bank holder, especially given what that distinction has really been the last couple of years. Like, it's not quite – it doesn't quite have the prestige that it once did. So I think he's also antagonistic, though. Here's the other thing I should throw in. He's antagonistic to both guys, too, to Seth and to Roman currently. So I think that would all be fine, even though that probably sounds like sacrilege to a lot of people.
Brett, any closing words from you?
No, that's it. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate all the time, and I'll catch up on the earlier parts and listen to the rest now. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks. Good topics. All right, you can still call us if you are live streaming, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. LaMarcus from D.C. is up next. LaMarcus, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Anyway, I'm sorry I didn't get your guest behind.
Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Hey.
About Seth and his about Seth and his music, do you think, well, to me, Seth isn't, I would say, 100% heel, because I feel like self-motivation is more about, kind of like championships and admiration from the fans. And, I mean, my timeline may be off, but I feel like Seth didn't really care as much about the fans going along with his music. Until when Cody came, when he feuded with Cody, and I wonder if at some point Cody and Seth are gonna come back and feud again. And part of Seth's story is that when Cody came back to WWE, he took Seth's spotlight. When he debuted, the fans were singing along to his music and everything. And I feel like in a way, Seth is sort of scarred, and it's kind of scarred at copying that. So in his head, look at me, Cody. The fans are chanting. Look how the fans are singing along to my music. I feel like in a way they do it with Seth more than they do with Cody. Or at least maybe it's more sustained with Seth than with Cody. Do you think there's some kind of do you think that could be a possibility, or does that kind of make sense what I'm saying?
Robert, when do you expect to see that?
I think it'll take a while. Like, undoubtedly, Cody and Seth are going to reemerge at some point after WrestleMania and that Hell in a Cell match. They are sort of like forever linked in a weird way. So obviously, it's gonna happen at some point. But I think there's gonna be such a conscious effort, in my opinion, to keep the two of them apart for a really long time. Because that's not really the prize that Cody is interested in, the one he has. So it'll be so long. Now, as far as you're thinking about the chanting, too, I also think that's a weird thing to feud on, though, because, like, it's one guy's song has lyrics and another guy's song is just a tune. That's why – that's the difference to two. I don't think it really is a good plot point for, like, of how who's more over necessarily. I don't think that would be something for those two. With the history those two have, I don't think that would really – I get what you're saying, and maybe it's in the spirit of something bigger, but I just don't think that specifically is the place to rest it.
Go ahead, Lamarcus.
I didn't mean the music is the purpose of it. I mean, but it's like part of it, just kind of – because I feel like with both of them, Cody and Seth, the part of the – their popularity is their music. So I'm not saying like that's like, the feud isn't based off the music, just more of, it's kind of like an added part. Because I guess you look at it, when Cody came, he beat Seth, three times? two or three times back to back and everything. So he kind of, his storyline, you could say, kind of sent Seth down, kind of like a losing role. I mean, he didn't really come back until I guess this year when he became champion again. But I'm not saying I'm expecting him a few anytime soon. But I mean, at some point, I mean, it could be like years from now. Cody could go on. I mean, keep going on to he could, win a Roman championship, and like later on, they can come back around in a few years, and they can be sort of like the Finn and Finn and stuff, like they're circling back around after however many years this has been. So I just saying that could be a part of it.
Yeah, I mean the Cody journey is, I mean they've got him with Dominic. They're going to do a Lesnar match. I don't know what fills out the rest of the year, unless at SummerSlam they go to Cody Reigns somehow. I'm curious in what way Cody and Seth cross paths again, in what context. I think my inclination is to say they should keep them apart as long as possible, and then make sure it really means something and it doesn't just feel like, sort of a filler or transition match, sort of like Seth Ballard feels, mm-hmm. where you're trying to make up for the impression that this isn't the centerpiece match of the pay-per-view or PLE that it's on. And I do think Cody's probably going to be a heel at some point. We'll see. I mean, if things go well for him, they won't. But, man, it's sort of like with Roman. He can be a really good heel someday, whether he's, managed by Paul Heyman or doing it on his own. Who knows? There's all kinds of stories they could tell with him. And I wouldn't rule out that the next time we see them face each other, especially if they're both baby faces for the next year, and then in the draft they get separated, they might not cross paths for quite a while. I'd be fine with that. I just don't know if we need the two top baby faces going after each other just because they're two of the top wrestlers on the brand, if there's not a good storyline reason for it. Yeah, go to Robert.
I will say, like, on I think it was WrestleMania week when Cody was doing a lot of media with, like, mainstream sports outlets, he kept bringing up Seth, like, a lot. It seemed very intentional, where even, like, in a shoot way, kind of, like, well, I like everyone, but I don't know about Seth. And I think this might be Cody being a good character, but I've always thought, like, that feud was so big, like, what that feud kind of meant, not so big as it let the world on fire, but it really did make Cody's career, I think, in a way, with a lot of people and changed a lot of things that I do think it is important enough to him. I'm with Wade, though. I think eventually Cody's part of the SmackDown brand down the road. So if they ever go back to like that Survivor Series concept, I'm thinking of it more so like, especially like what you're saying, if it's like a face versus face thing and about like popularity, that's kind of something you would do in like a one-off Survivor Series kind of environment. So that's where I kind of see it. But I just think it's something. Go ahead.
That's why I mentioned earlier. I don't think, well, it still feels a face, but his motivation as far as why he's a face is not it's pure as Cody. Like you said, face against face, but I feel like as soon as they feud again, it'll be easier for Seth to be the heel because he has a reason to not like, coming in, taking his spotlight in WrestleMania and all that.
Sure. Yeah. LaMarcus, anything else you want to bring up?
Mm-hmm. I just said, as far as Rhea, I think Rhea needs to start with Kyle. I guess kind of with Kyle Mitch, but I think for me, I think Rhea needs to start doing things that would make her a heel because she's getting cheered a lot. She's getting mommy chants and stuff, which I mean, she's a heel, so that shouldn't technically be happening and stuff. So I feel like she should be doing something to be more of a heel. And although Dominic gets a heel, he gets a lot of heel. I feel like people are just more. She's just more likable than Dominic. I mean, I guess Dominic's likable in his own way, but I just think she needs to be a heel, and I'm not sure who in the women's division, at least on Raw, to be a babyface enough to get her a heel seat. Other than maybe Becky, unless I'm forgetting someone. But what do you think about that?
Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's hard because in general, Rhea is the kind of the coolest character on the show. So it's really hard to boo her. She has a Steve Austin kind of way about her right now. At the same time, very few people get, I wouldn't say genuine heel heat, but are like the Pavlovian urge to boo is the same with Dominic. So I think it's just something people are really into. And unless you are absolutely, which in 2023, people aren't into like faces need to be this and heels need to be this and booed and cheer. I think it's fine for right now. Like, I don't think Rhea necessarily has to establish anything super heely because I don't know, quite frankly, if people would buy it. I think that's kind of the issue. It's almost like the Roman Reigns thing, although Roman Reigns is written, so much better over the years. But I do think it's a bit of a conundrum. Like, if you want her to be a heel, that is a tall task. At the same time, I would hate if they just made her into a babyface, like a traditional babyface. That would also be a really, really poor decision. So I don't have an answer. I think they need to figure that out. But for now, I think they're okay.
Yeah, I'm in no rush to do anything different with her, but Dominic is a heat, is definite heat on Dominic, but people do want to cheer Ripley, and they've got a challenge on their hands to navigate that and not move too quickly away from Dom and Rhea as a pair on television, but also take into account that if fans really are into Ripley, get some heels built up Raw roster so that you don't have a glut of top baby faces if you do turn her. But I would wait to turn her until you've got, a couple of opponents that you feel good about having her face as champion or trying to climb back to the top if she drops the belt to Becky or whomever in the meantime. Anything you want to add to that, LaMarcus?
I'm not saying like turn her face or anything, just that. I mean, I'm the type of person, I don't believe in heel needs to be a heel, face needs to be a face, but just hearing the mommy chant, and maybe I just never, I know she's getting a chant, but I feel like chants usually like, who's your mommy, but I just thought that, no, those chants were so loud, like, this is a face, no, this is a baby face kind of reaction she's getting, which, I mean, I like it, but at the same time, I'm thinking she's a heel, so, but like, that's it, like earlier, what Kyle said that, it's just that she's not really, I guess since she's not really wrestling heels, it's hard to like position her as a heel. I mean, the guy can be heels around her, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you want to, if the idea is we have a timeline for her to go babyface, you don't want her to act out in ways that's sort of unforgivable and fight it. And that might be what they're doing with Damian Priest right now, too, is having him sort of be likable and, fight with honor in the meantime until they get to the point where they do the turn. But right now, I just think they're like, whatever we're doing is working, even if it's unconventional.
I think, LaMarcus, on that real quick, I think you are answering Kyle's question. Like, that is exactly why there is not a chance. Because it's kind of like that Roman Reigns situation from a couple of years ago when they had to kind of bring in the Sammy storyline because there was no one there. Like, she would smother right now, like, a by-golly up-and-coming babyface would be absolutely smothered for having to have a match with her right now. So I think you're identifying why they need to do what Kyle is sort of identifying. I think those calls actually do – like, there's a question and answer there for sure. Go ahead with your next point, but I just thought of that as you were about to say that.
Yeah, but also the thing with WWE women's division, like they have embarrassment of reaches as far as women's talent, and they're not utilizing them to why I feel like they could be, and that's one of the disappointments for me with the main roster of WWE right now, because you have all these talented women wrestlers, and it's like y'all can be doing so much more with them, but you're only sort of scratching the surface. But Kevin Owens and Sandy, how do you feel about their tag team? Because even when they started doing I didn't really buy in all that much into it because, I mean, if you told me the last time that the last time that Sandy and Kevin Owens interacted and they were good together, it ended because Kevin Owens powerbombed Sammy into the side of the ring, I would believe you, because it's just, that's like the memory I have, because it's just like Kevin isn't, a good friend to Sammy, and I just feel like the entire sort of back and forth between Sammy and Roman and Sammy and Kevin, they were both gaslighting Sammy in their own way, so it kind of turned to this, like, this love triangle, Kevin telling Sammy, like, go to Roman and stuff like that, and Roman telling Sammy to go to go to Kevin. And now that they're like together, it kind of feels like that, you know, you finally got the girl that you wanted or whatever. You finally got the person that you wanted. And now just like you're going through the motions, and for whatever reason, Kevin's like, you know, yelling and like screaming at people and stuff like that. Now I'm wondering if that's Kevin kind of explained today, but I wonder if that really what it is. But I feel like it's because, or probably because Sammy is still, you know, kind of getting to bloodline business. And one thing is, like I said, it's relationship things. Like, you know, you're with me now. Why are you still like inserting yourself into this stuff? And everything, and maybe Kevin is doing all this. Getting upset because he's blowing up because he's kind of frustrated with, you know, kind of what Sammy is doing. And it's and also, you know, Kevin's more of a fighter. So it's like, why are we doing all this talking? Or why are we dealing with all this kind of backstage stuff when we should be in the ring fighting? And I just said, I'm not interested in, you know, a Kevin and Sammy feud, but I feel like it's.
Yeah.
It just kind
so
of.
So, LaMarcus.
The dynamic. Go ahead.
Yes. Sorry. So, yeah, I don't think we're going to get a KO-Sammy feud out of the fact that KO is a hothead and Sammy's calming him down. I think it's just a thing they decided to do to just add a little personality to KO and show that Sammy is the level-headed guy trying to control and direct Kevin's anger and frustrations in a good direction. It gives them something to play off each other about. Robert, what do you make of it? Do you like it? Do you think it's portending something in the future, or it just sort of is what it is?
Well, I mean, at some point in the future, obviously they will feud again because that's Sammy and Kevin, as they said, are willing to do it forever. But I think this is just the dynamic between them, because part of their friendship on screen has always been that, like, they are the only ones that can really tolerate each other. Like, Sammy couldn't hang with the Bloodline, and Kevin turns on all his friends, but they have their eccentricities, and that is why they are like best friends. That's why they have a familial relationship that, you know, mirrors the Bloodline in that way. So I think this is just part of the Sammy and Kevin experience. I wouldn't spend too much time reading into it unless they just kind of wanted to retrofit it and they did that. But I don't really get the hunch that that's why they have that little bit of character development. I think that is just, you know, if you want to turn the volume on each one of those characters, that's what they do, and they're going to play off each other, and they're each going to have different moments where they're both kind of the erratic one.
LaMarcus, any quick closing words for you?
I know you mentioned Cody being a heel. I also think that would be a cool idea, and I haven't thought of if he's a heel, if he's like in a stable, and I would think it would be interesting if it was stable, I guess, kind of like Legacy, but maybe like Cody, Charlotte, I don't know, Jey Uso, like another like second or third generation wrestler, but they're all like world champions, and they're kind of hogging the championship, the spotlight thing. And it's more of the feud, it's more of the some of the younger wrestlers like trying to, you know, take down that stable of theirs. But that's just my thought. If some point if Cody was a heel, because I think Cody would be a great leader of a heel fashion. That's all I have. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, great. Good to hear from you, LaMarcus. Any thoughts on Cody heel, Robert?
Yeah, I mean, it's something down the road, but you don't need to jump at it like that quickly. I think it's like you said, though, there's a lot of value. And even though they're doing a good enough job with him, all the things that people are panicking about that he's going to get booed on eventually are eventually going to come true, and you're going to have a lot of space. I do think a heel faction leader obviously would be really good. I do not need a reset though of the new blood, or whatever that was in W that Russo booked all those years, or the main event mafia or any of that. I think we're okay with that storyline because people only just want to ever see the old guys when they do that storyline. So it never really quite comes off the way you want it. But I mean, you know, if you bring in Russo, I mean, you got to do what you got to do, bro.
All right, we will move to the mailbag here and begin with JB from Detroit, who goes, is pro wrestling overdoing open challenges? Yes. I understand that Seth's new title is a working man's title, but one, I think we have too many working men's titles, and two, I feel like that's the lazy trope for every working men's title is to implement an open challenge at some point. Yeah, I'm a fan of earning your matches against top stars. I get the open challenge concept less often than we're getting it, and more so for secondary titles. I know what they're trying to do with the world title and define it differently, but man, I just think it should be like a rarity and this like a rare. Anybody getting a shot at what is deemed a world title should not be the result of something flimsy like the first person to raise their hand. I want more criteria. Robert, what do you think of this?
Absolutely. Because I think it misunderstands why like the John Cena Open Challenge was so awesome, because of everything you say. It's for a secondary title. It's a main eventer coming down to see if he can hang with the cool kids. So that has like a whole different dynamic. And in general, that's what I said at the top of the show, you usually think they're going to be something they're not. And you know, AEW does them all the time. I'm with you. Like if you're going to do them, probably save them for something like really big or really important and something honestly that still fits within the storyline. I know the idea of it's an open challenge, so anyone can meet the challenge, but I think those things work best when it's like, oh yeah, the former champ that was out with injury for 7 months, like then that actually works. But yeah, we have way, way too many open challenges. And I agree with the broader point, and JB from Detroit, thank you for emailing and great emailer to our show. So we have that in common, but
yes.
Yeah. And that's why I said earlier, like I know the working man's title thing, but you don't let the title can define itself. I hate when WWE like sort of overcomes their own oppressions in the way that they're doing. Like the reason why you need a working man's title is because we don't make the other champion work, or we have a women's revolution for the women's oppression that we created. Like it's really weird when they do these kind of things. I know those are weird things to compare, but I think it's the same general concept. Like I don't know. Wade, did they ever say back in like the 80s that the IC belt was the workers' belt, or was it just kind of implied because Mr. Perfect and Bret Hart had that belt? Like I don't think you necessarily, unless it's going to be a different set of rules, the way like the pure title or something like that is. I don't even necessarily like that as a gimmick for a title.
Yeah, it was actually I think the fans who just started referring to it as that, the kind of pre-internet era, even pre-RSPW message board era. Newsletter readers just saw the belt that, you know, Don Morocco at the end of his run being a decent worker, but Tito Santana, Greg Valentine, Randy Savage, Bret Hart, heck, Shawn Michaels, Kurt Hennig, on and on. I mean, it's just like, it was all during Hulk Hogan. Most of those names were IC champ during Hulk Hogan's reign. And Hogan, you know what you're going to get. It was formulaic. It drew in the casual fans and big crowds and all that. But you wanted to be able to show off how exciting and athletic pro wrestling could be outside of that main event Hulk Hogan formula. And the IC title was the match at house shows and on pay-per-view that was expected to shine. Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage is a great example for WrestleMania 3 where it took on that role. So, but it wasn't anything I heard WWE, and maybe my memories let me down, but I don't think WWE ever didn't refer to that until, you know, in more recent years. But the fans did. They thought that way because that is how it was booked. It was pretty obviously meant to be, well, this guy's not big enough to beat Hulk Hogan, or he's a good guy and he wouldn't dare, you know, like Priest told Balor, you know, if we're friends, I won't go after your belt. But you kind of knew intrinsically it was going to be more exciting.
Yeah, but it wasn't like because Bret wasn't as good of negotiating his contract as Hogan was. Like that wasn't the actual impetus, the way this is kind of implied to be. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Next, JB says, I really hope that bringing Logan Paul back next week for his hometown of Cleveland isn't an attempt to test the waters for him as a babyface again. Babyface or heel, Logan Paul? What do you think, Robert?
You can't do it. Internet celebrities just cannot be baby faces on cable television or in front of live crowds. It doesn't work. I will say, though, for a one little bit commercial, we have had, like, what, 6 comments about that? So you wonder why they bring in Logan Paul. I think, like, point proven, though, even on this show with this hardcore of an audience.
Yeah, yep. All right, then he says, how many iterations of KO Sammy versus Imperium matches are we going to get? Is this ultimately leading to either Sammy or KO versus Gunther for the IC title? Perhaps one gets a shot at Money in the Bank and one gets a shot at SummerSlam. I do think this feud has made the tag titles themselves a bit cold, as Kaiser and Vinci haven't been treated as very credible as an individual team. As always, love the show and go VIP, everyone. He adds in a follow-up email, I forgot about Riddle. Perhaps these play out as TV matches at some point. To me, KO and Imperium was felt like a means to an end, more of a transition. Mm-hmm. To headline Raw, you had to put Gunther in that match. It felt like a bigger deal than when they just, you know, easily dispatched Kaiser and Vinci. What do you, you know, we talked about Judgment Day quite a bit. What do you think about Imperium and and how they're mixing and matching them and presenting them on Raw so far.
Well, they're another kind of main event crew that you know, like Sami and KO and like the Judgment Day, that can be considered a tag team a little bit, but are really in the mix. I mean, I'll say even anecdotally, being at a house show a couple weeks ago with Cody and KO going up against the Imperium, like there was no doubt that was needed to be the main event that night. I think they are, I don't know if they know like who the guy is going to be that's going to be the ultimate challenger. So, and I think that KO and Gunther is a nice thing to think about in theory, but I don't actually see it in the cards. Like KO has a very distinct path and it intersects with Imperium. And they could certainly go to that match at some point, but I really don't think we need to extrapolate too much out of anything we've seen recently to think that is like a big direction of where they're going.
All right, up next is Zahn in St. Louis says, hello, Aiden Robert. Tonight was one of the best Raws this year. What type of character change do you see coming for Natalya? He's got three questions. That's the first one. I'm intrigued. I have no idea. I didn't have a lot of time to think about it because they just moved on right to the next thing. But, yeah, Natalya's saying, yeah, being Natalya is not working for me. I think it's smart. You know, when a wrestler loses, you know, a couple big matches and it's like, well, what are they going to do now? They can either get sort of lost in the shuffle and just – not, you know, and not that Natalya is a perennial top tier wrestler at this point, but she can visit main events and really deliver. But the way that she's been losing, it's sort of like, are they writing her off? Are they kind of going to, you know, move her way down the roster? But now it looks like they're hinting that she's going to make some sort of change. I have no idea what that could be. I'm a little nervous about what they might be considering, but I don't have any specific notions that I either like or don't like that are coming to mind. Just a little concern of what I'm going to try to do to spark her character. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting because I thought at the Saudi Arabia show, she got squashed and nobody had a problem with it. It felt like, and it felt like the appropriate thing to do, which I think really, it's like when Dolph suddenly would just get beat instantly. It's like, okay, everyone's thinking like Wade now. We're good. We're in good shape. And I do think that Natty needs a character change. The problem is you forget that the one thing Natty does really well is the wrestling part of it. Character stuff, it can be a little dicey. So I definitely think they're going in that direction. Usually, you know, when people have the I'm losing gimmick, I don't know if always great stuff comes out of it, although we certainly have seen that. I don't trust that at this point in her career and with her mic still that we're necessarily headed for any like greener pastures. This might be the intentional putting, like we need actual lower card women's wrestlers because those don't actually exist. So maybe right. That's what this is. Like the women's division doesn't really have like an R-Truth. I know he's not wrestling right now, but that type, like just a solid lower card wrestler. They don't really have those tiers in the women's division. So maybe that's where they're transitioning. She could be like a Mustafa Ali type of figure. So I think that would be better than like this, like it seems like almost impossible, even though she is in main events and she's respected because of her name and cause she's very good at wrestling. I think we're okay without another Natty reset to the main event. Like, I think even if it's a decent character, we probably have a little bit of diminished returns at this point.
I think like Chelsea Green would have benefited from winning matches on TV before losing all the time. There's just, you know, there's wrestlers who lose and it doesn't benefit the wrestler who beats them, because they don't win very often. And whatever they do with Natalya, whatever they do with Chelsea Green, Sonya Deville, like you've got to have some women who you trust, but who are largely there to job to give, to elevate the mid-carders and give them some wins so that when the mid-carders lose to the upper-carders, it feels like you've beat someone who actually on occasion can win. And so I don't know where Natalya fits in that and what her new character, you know, what her new character is and how it gets over the fans kind of will determine where she lands, but she should be utilized at some point at some level on the roster because of how solid she is in the ring that, you know, working with some of the younger wrestlers, even if it means losing, she's still got to win sometimes. But even if she loses most of the time and is lower mid card, be there to help other wrestlers get better and be that credible opponent who could win any match, even if she's losing about half of them on TV or more.
It's why she fits into like the NXT setting really well when she's in that orbit, because she does have that like credibility she brings up and the wrestling ability, but still ultimately loses in that setting.
Yeah, I mean, some of Charlotte's matches, I mean, she helped train Ronda Rousey in some of her best work. Rousey's best work has been against Natalya, and Natalya's, you know, really respected in that locker room, and I think wrestlers who have a ways to develop want to have a chance to work with her and learn from her. So if a gimmick change puts her in a position to be on TV more often and be have a relevant character who also is helping wrestlers get better, I'm all for that. All right, number two from Azan. Can we appreciate the work of Chad Gable lately? What do you think makes Chad so likable? Robert.
Well, if I knew what made him so likable, I would probably try to replicate it myself to make all that cash. Because I know like Kurt Angle's the lazy analysis, but there is something. So it's actually a little bit more like Daniel Bryan, though. He physically just kind of looks kind of funny. Like I can't even explain what it is because it kind of sounds like you're being mean, but he just kind of looks funny. He is diminutive, and like Daniel Bryan, he's the most serious and earnest guy the way he's portraying everything he does. And those people tend to like win the hearts of wrestling fans when, even if you're given just like the worst thing in the world, when you kind of go all in on it and, you know, it's not, you know, Brodus Clay, with his frown as he's doing it, there's a much, you know, more, likelihood of even stuff that isn't great, getting over. He also has a pretty good crew with it. Like him and Otis have a really amazing chemistry. I feel like we talk about this almost every time I'm on with you, and we were talking about like the you know, like a lower card tag team, and I think they fit that role really, really, really well, especially now, you know, bringing in the Maxine stuff. It works not just because of Otis, but because you have the trainer here in Chad Gable and recruiting others to his university. It's so ridiculous, but doesn't quite hit grading. That's a really fine line that WWE doesn't always get, but this is the situation where they hit that line.
Yes, well put, well put. All right, and then he goes, what would be the pros and cons of Judgment Day replacing Damian Priest with JD McDonagh? We talked a lot about Judgment Day, but would Finn Balor being the leader, McDonagh being an understudy of Balor, and then, I mean, to me, if you look at the longer story arc, that can lead to something with Dominic and McDonagh as a team or as internal rivals vying for Balor's approval and attention or something like that. Like it would shake things up. And it would give Balor a chance to be the leader of a faction in WWE and the veteran. And cause it, you know, they started off going, there is no leader. Everybody are equals. But if you have Dominic and McDonagh underneath Balor and then Priest moves on to other things with Rhea Ripley as sort of this, you know, wild card hanging out with Dom, I think there's potential for that to work. I don't think McDonagh replaces Priest in terms of looking like a main event guy. But that doesn't mean that has to be Judgment Day's role. What do you think, Robert?
Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I think those points are valid. I feel like the McDonagh-Balor thing is almost, can exist just outside of Judgment Day, and obviously it's intersecting with it, so it's going to have something. I do think the sort of big personality that Dominic has right now might make it a little bit difficult for McDonagh to thrive in that environment, unless the Judgment Day just becomes the star-making machine, and then you can go with it. It was certainly just boost them, I think, from an overall credibility standpoint, you know, and that kind of that wrestling ability that they would then have with him and Finn in there. I do think faction leader, as we're talking earlier with Cody, that faction leader, obviously, it's something that Finn or Prince Devitt has kind of done his whole career. So that is a good spot for him, even like because he feels a lot less lost when, you know, even though tonight his gimmick was kind of that he was lost, but he feels a lot less unfocused as a character whenever he's a part of these factions, especially in the lead.
All right, up next, Zach in Texas. It's been a minute since I've watched Raw, mostly because I've been working Monday nights. I haven't keeping up with things, and I got thoughts. Okay, three specific things. First, Becky Lynch and Zoe Stark being in Money in the Bank seems counterproductive. They're already in a feud. It takes the suspense out of whether either of them might win. I don't know that I agree. I mean, Becky or Zoe could win and still feud afterwards.
People feud in the Royal Rumble. Like, people feud into the Royal Rumble. That happened plenty of times before. Yeah, it's usually just another piece of that feud.
And you can win Money in the Bank, carry the briefcase around, and that's not the only thing you're doing. You can still have a feud. So, I guess I don't understand or agree with the premise, one or the other. I think it's good for Zoe and a fresh opponent for Becky. And one of my issues with women's division is it just felt like, okay, there's the, you know, top five or six, and they all feud with each other. And then there's this next layer, and they're not good enough to do more than briefly visit and lose to them. And I mean, that group is going to age out, and they've got some new people on the you know, rising through the ranks. So put them against top people while you can, while they're still around.
Yeah,
second,
a disagreement.
Yep. Second, Seth Rollins doing open challenge type matches for his world title devalues a title whose value is already tenuous at best. He should do eliminator or proving ground matches so that when he loses one of those, he has a ready-made feud. I agree with Zach on that one, and we talked about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Lastly, WWE continues to horribly misuse Dom and his heat. From the beginning, he should have been treated like an annoying heel manager. He can get the heat, but he wouldn't have to wrestle. Instead, the ultimate goal would be for the babyface to finally get their hands on him. Him as a pay-per-view opponent for Cody Rhodes is ridiculous. I've got my issues with Cody, but Dom can't lace Cody's boots. And yes, being able to have more than a passable match on pay-per-view matters in 2023. Zach, I think, is underestimating what Dom is doing in the ring right now, mm-hmm. and maybe overvaluing how important it is to be a great worker when you have the kind of personality and heat that's sort of captured in the bottle at this moment. And I think it's a really good binder or bridge opponent for Cody, waiting for Lesnar's music to play and Lesnar to answer his challenge, because he can get in a win. It diverts him from, like, people going, why isn't he going after a title? Dom's annoying. People want to see Cody beat him up. And it also, I think, assures Cody getting cheered. Not that you want to be, like, constantly paranoid that something's going to go wrong, but there is a history of Cody. And a lot of people are kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop a little bit when it comes to him getting universally cheered for the most part in WWE. So Dominic's just a fun feud. I do not have any problem with the work Dominic is doing in the ring, because I don't define wrestling as you have to pass a certain threshold. And I think Zach is like, well, Dom doesn't, and fair enough. That, you know, if that's your opinion, but not every match in wrestling has to just be built around, oh, can it be 3¾ stars or better? Sometimes it's just about telling stories with characters who are over and having ebb and flow to top guys and who they feud with. And I like this. I think it's better than just force feeding another top guy to Cody with, you know, probably less than clean finishes. And in this case, Cody can win clean or be humiliated by Brock showing up and costing a match against Dom too. I don't think they'll do that, but you know, it's pro wrestling. You can't rule it out. Robert, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with just about everything you said. When it first got announced, I was like, well, that's a step down. And then I kind of went through almost everything you said and like, oh, no, it actually works. Because, again, you need to divert him away from the title. Now, I would be in agreement with Zach if I thought in my heart of hearts, okay, well, they're going to try to get a 20-minute New Japan match out of this thing. Then I would absolutely agree with you. Like, yeah, that's not really either guy's forte. However, when you talk about like over characters on the show, they're in pretty close proximity to each other as far as those things go. And as you're saying, Wade, the in-ring stuff isn't as bad, or it is what it's intended to be. And also, if he is a heel manager, think about it. There's actually no reason to hate Dominic. Like, okay, he's dating the coolest chick on the show, doesn't have to wrestle. The reason why Dominic has heat is because he gets to wrestle because he's in
yes,
the ring.
That is
the source of his heat, that he's bad at wrestling. That's kind of it was proven true. I don't think he was bad. He just wasn't quite ready to that point. But
yeah.
he is good enough to be on TV. And that's, as you said, Wade, kind of all you need to do. There's plenty of great wrestlers that didn't have, you know, or great worker. That term worker has two meanings. Sometimes it means Chris Benoit, and sometimes it can mean like Hulk Hogan. And I think those are both valid uses of that word, but they are different. They're different kind of definitions. And I think we need to be clear and make sure those don't necessarily always interact. And we don't, you know, because you have a good match, it doesn't mean that you're a 5-star guy, but you could still have a really good entertaining, but more important than entertaining is wanting to get the good guy or the bad guy to win that. If you accomplish that, you have accomplished what you need to accomplish. And that doesn't make, even though I want to watch Ring of Honor type of, you know, early 2000s matches all day long. That is my preference of wrestling. But
yeah,
you need one to have the other also, though, too. So just don't, you know, don't, the hierarchy of priorities there isn't what I think what you're thinking of it as, like frivolous stuff is probably where Zach is going.
Any thoughts on the Cody Miz match? Speaking of Cody,
I thought it was better than it should have been, and I don't know why. I just thought it was like pretty. I thought all the matches on tonight's show were just kind of like didn't overstay their welcome, and I thought that was the case here. I mean, they have fairly decent chemistry. They've been wrestling each other, you know, for about 20 years at this point, so they know really what they're doing. I just thought it was a good, solid match. Miz is weird. Some weeks I think they're doing the natty thing with Miz, And then other times I think, oh, he's like the former champion, and that's how they're kind of presenting. So it's, I think this week was the was that category, and then like if he's if a celebrity comes around next week, he's Chavo Guerrero again. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint where Miz is actually at in his career right now.
I agree. Yeah, he seems like he's trying to work hard, move fast, and show he can that he belongs out there, you know, with wrestlers who can turn it, you know, turn it on and go. Cody's not Ricochet, you know, or I mean, in terms of his speed and athleticism, and it was, you know, a bit of a hardworking, soft style, you know, Miz specialty, where like there's, you know, fundamentally sound things that are happening, but it's not Gunther, it's not Ricochet, it's not Chad Gable, it's something different, and it's not for everybody. But I thought the two were out there, and they're like, we're gonna go out there, and I mean, they sort of each have had reputations as like three-star specialists, three and a quarter star specialists in at different times of their careers. Cody certainly moved beyond that. Miz has for sure had better matches than that, but that does tend to be the water level, you know, that people kind of expect or settle in for with them. And I mean, this was only 11 minutes of a TV match. It wasn't even three stars, but if it was a pay-per-view caliber match, they were working in a way that made me think, all right, we don't want to wrestle down to people's lowest expectations for us, but you know, fill this 11 minutes with hard hitting action. So, I mean, yeah, I thought it was solid, and, you know, Cody got a nice win, and that's sort of the role that Miz is in. You know, they don't have a ton of people who they think they can hold viewers' interest while they're wrestling. And so they have to find creative ways to put them out there, even if it's sort of a random one-off sometimes.
Yeah. And Wade, I just wanted to add on that is during the match, it ran through my head. I was actually like kind of nostalgic for the style they were wrestling in, strangely enough. Like, I called the OVW style, although I'm not sure how much time Cody spent in OVW versus FCW, but that is a specific, that's how every wrestler was trained for like 5 years in the company. Oh. And now they're all, you know, more off of the Seth Rollins sort of tree. I mean, specifically it's more NXT, but yeah. But as I was watching, I was like, oh, we don't really have matches like this anymore. And that used to be the groan inducing thing that everyone was trained like that and wrestled like that. That actually, I think both guys have a little bit of a novelty with that. It was a very obscure thing, but something I think was kind of relevant to the match.
What defined it for people who don't know what you're saying? And I want to hear a little more clarity too. What is the OVW style versus the Seth Rollins FCW NXT style?
So I would say like almost like Triple H derivative, if that makes sense. Just, It's solid. It's crisp. It doesn't look like it hurts very bad though either. Like you said, the soft style. In order for it to work though, there tends to have to be like a lot of really good personal issues going with the feud, which is also like a hallmark I think of Triple H. Whereas like, you know, again, Seth Rollins and Finn Balor and Kenny Omega and all these guys can just kind of have a match. The storyline helps and enhances them to no end, but the physicality of the match is what they're selling. Whereas it almost like a video game style. It's very, very basic. It's very, very basic and bare bones. Now, for those of you who weren't watching back then, the problem is like Cody and Miz have really good personalities. Back then, kind of no one had personalities, and Chris Masters was out there wrestling. Bobby Lashley, quite frankly, is a product of that system, although he has moved on. So there's, when I say OVW era too, I'm not talking about like the class, I'm not talking about like the Cornette specific guy, like the 2002 guys. It's that middle kind of very Johnny Ace influence hiring era. And I think Triple H, again, Terry Taylor was around and all that. I think Triple H is kind of the patron saint of that. So like him, and then like Drew McIntyre's the missing link. Drew McIntyre and Roman are the missing links that connect it to like Seth Rollins. That's the evolution.
Yeah. Good explanation. Matt Riddle, Damian Priest. What do you think about what we've seen with Riddle lately?
He pretty much is a plot device, I feel like, at this point. He's just used for other things to happen. Yeah, I it's kind of crazy. And all these people we've talked about that were involved, or Sami, KO, Gunther, you know, the rest of the Imperium guys, he's the least consequential. He's the plot point. He's the plot device.
And then finally, on my list, just Ricochet, Bronson Reed, and then the interference from Nakamura, which, of course, understandably upset Ricochet. Where are they going with this besides the triple threat?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really good. That was specifically the part that I didn't see on Raw, so I'll just kind of defer back to you.
Yeah. I don't love it. But we'll see. I mean, I want to give it a chance. I mean, when Nakamura interfered, I'm just like, dude, like, what? Just wait till after the match. Like, I just don't have sympathy for babyfaces who interfere and cost somebody who didn't do anything to them a match because they couldn't just hold their temper, you know, keep their temper for just slightly longer.
So it's three good performers, so you'd hope they kind of would get it right.
Yeah, I guess I'll ask you too, Raquel and Shayna, what do you think of Baszler getting a quick win with a roll up and a help from Ronda? You know, what was the point of this, and what did you think of their execution?
Yeah, I kind of think Raquel is a little bit higher in the pecking order for that necessarily to happen. Like, even though she not necessarily look like that, I have that sort. She has that kind of McIntyre thing to her, I guess, where it's like, oh yeah, well, she's gonna be good with there. She's gonna have that, or she's tall is for kind of what that's code for. I mean, they're suddenly just super pushing Ronda and Shayna, so I guess that's what you do. I mean, it was like kind of noticeably short, so I hope that was the point they were trying to jog, because if it was just something that kind of got cut for time or something, it had the shortness of the match played into, I think, the effect of how we received that pinfall.
Do you like Ronda and Shayna as a team, as an act, rather than in the singles division? We talk about, you know, the women's division not having a lot of depth. That's two, you know, good names. Ronda, top star. Shayna, somebody people keep waiting to be, you know, more protected, like she was in NXT than with Paul Levesque, rather than what Vince McMahon did with her, especially during the pandemic, where I think Shayna was hurt by the fact that her style just didn't play very well in empty venues compared to full venues, where a little more energy and atmosphere is added to her style. So I've endorsed the Ronda Shayna pairing. How about you?
Yeah. Okay. Like, and then to what you said, like, and they were also making her a vampire while people were still there. So that was all very weird. How they did that. And she, I think it's too late for Shayna, but Shayna's kind of in that natty way too. I mean, she's not the wrestler that Natty is, but she's kind of chameleon-y and can be just scary enough, although I don't view her as a legitimate threat. And I don't really view Ronda as that anymore, even though she's like the easiest wrestler theoretically to make as a legitimate threat. But her wrestling and her promos have caught up to her so much in this run that they kind of need each other. Like, you know, Ronda needs Shayna. Now, everything I said about Ronda, and I don't think she's so much of a distressed asset from what she was a while back, but she still is an asset. And you still, if you have her around, you want to do something. Instead of force feeding these weird singles, awkward things, at least it looks like there's a purpose to it. And they do have pretty good chemistry with each other. Even if they can't really cut promos, they speak well with each other when the mics pick them up on the side. So yeah, I've absolutely endorsed it. And anything that is that division being focused while you have the division, keep it, you know, lean into it and make it something, because that division just needs to be a division, or it needs to be put out of its misery.
Robert, anything else in your notes from Raw tonight before we wrap up?
No, I think we just about covered everything that happened or that was noteworthy that happened.
Yeah, yep, I feel the same. All right, well, cool. Great having you back on.
Great to be on again.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Again, email us with any questions or comments for the flagship tomorrow that I'll be recording with Rich Fan, and then we'll be by Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday this week, a busy week ahead.